From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 30th, 2021. The Brewer Crew is in Atlanta for a weekend series with the Braves, and the Wisconsin State Fair kicks off this Thursday. Let's start with, have I got a deal for you? You could be the proud owner of the world-famous Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. It's for sale for just $65,000. You'll have the coolest unit at the RV park. Here's the latest craze we can do without. Macaroni and cheese ice cream. You know, it could be the flavor of the day every day at Kauf's, and for me, that's still a hard no. First, we have murder hornets and zombie cicadas, then brain-eating tapeworms, and we're still not done. Roaming around in Texas, they have acid-shooting whip scorpions. I think it's right there in the Bible. This might very well be the end of days. And from Florida, a man got arrested for a DUI. He pulled up to a drive-through window and ordered burritos. Just one little problem. The drive-through wasn't a Taco Bell. It was a Bank of America. And our silly headline of the week is from the Times-Herald in Newburgh, New York. West Point cadets are training for deployment to Iraq by spending their weekends in New Jersey. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kill, Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. The S&P 500 hit a record Monday, sold off Tuesday and Wednesday, rebounded Thursday a little bit, and then sold off today to end the week. The week overall, the NASDAQ shed 1.1%, losing 164 points to close at 14,673. In the broader markets, the S&P 500 lost 0.4%, losing 17 points to close at 43.95. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended this week down 0.4%, losing 125 points. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week just under 35,000 at 34,936. Of course, it's important to look at the year. NASDAQ up a whopping 14% so far this year. S&P up 18%, including dividends, and the Dow is up 15.3%. You know, Brian, let's start with the Commerce Department report that came out yesterday morning. Said GDP in the second quarter of the year up a whopping 6.5%. Hardly ever happens. Down from the 8.5% rate the economists had forecast, but still a pretty good, solid number.
It's a great number. And, you know, these days we got to have some context. It's a great number considering what happened in the last year and a half. And now the economy is in many ways better off than it was before the pandemic. And I think that's really the key to this whole thing. We got through a year and a half. Here we are, kind of a little better off than before we started. And, you know, whether you're looking at the economic growth or the markets, it's really kind of a nice time to take a breather and look around and appreciate really what's happened, because returns have been fantastic. The market's in a fantastic place. The economy mostly on the doing really well. And, you know, we can spend a bunch of time talking about where we're going, but let's just all take a minute and appreciate what's going on here.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. You know, and also what was encouraging within that report is capital spending, business spending, like business equipment, is on a tear right now. And that's a really good precursor to things to come. Companies don't buy equipment. They don't think they're going to need it. So I was encouraged by that as well.
Well, we've had 10 years really of under investment in capital assets. And I think, you know, when companies are making a bunch of money as they have, they don't really need to plow it back into the company to make, you know, to improve earnings. And I think we're getting to a point now where there's a lot of incentive for companies to buy equipment, to expand research, to do those kinds of things that will increase productivity and set the table for continued growth down the road. So, you know, good news where we are. And also, I think that's a really good precursor for some of the good things that may come down the road.
You know, a lot of the commentary surrounding the GDP report that came out yesterday suggested that, you know, economic growth may have peaked this last quarter, along with concerns about the Delta variant spreading so quickly. I think they're both valid concerns. But as an earnings and interest rate guy, I look at the 10-year at under 1.3%, give or take. You know, it was as high as 1.74 earlier in the wintertime. So that's a pretty good decline in rates over a relatively short period of time, and earnings still look good for next year. So I think investors need to brace for a little bit of volatility. No one's really capable of talking about how quickly the Delta variant is going to spread and whether we get more mask mandates, whether we get more closures. Pretty hard to guess at this point in time, but it looks to me there's a chance for that. But I was reminded of the analogy of taking it off in an airplane. You know, at some point in time, they hit cruising altitude and they're going to throttle back. And that's kind of what we're going to be experiencing, I think, with the economy here. No one realistically believes that we're going to continue at 6.5%. I mean, that's just a big, big number. Last 11 years, we've averaged barely 2%. So anything above 2 is, you know, above trend line. So I think we need to be prepared, you know, for a little bit of volatility seasonally. You know, August, September, and October tend to be a little sloppy anyway. But keep your eyes on the prize. You know, longer term stocks do well. Short term could be anybody's guess. You know, Dave, let me ask you about inflation. I mean, the press were just loaded with articles last winter about how inflation's out of control and it's going to skyrocket. And, you know, probably the most popular word now is transitory, that in English. You know, a lot of the experts think that the supply constraints caused inflation to shoot up. I mean, nobody realistically thinks used car prices are going to go up 10% a month. But what's your feeling on inflation now relative to interest rates and even the market?
Bob, it's interesting because we've rarely had to have the inflation conversation in the last 10 years, really non-existent for many years. And so obviously I think that becomes a big talking point, right, when we finally get it. I think it inundates the headlines. People have a tendency to maybe sensationalize it a little bit. Now, there's some reality to it, of course. You've seen what's happened to lumber prices, and you mentioned used car prices and things like that. But we're starting to see some of that ease already. And the Fed has been very consistent in their message that this is transitory in their minds, and they are not going to overreact in this near term by, you know, taking away that, like we've talked about in the past, the proverbial punch bowl and really stand on rates here. So I think they've committed to letting it run a little bit here to see how truly transitory this might be. But we're already seeing some signs of some of that relaxing here in the
near term. Interesting to look at the Fed minutes. And how they kind of paraphrase, we're thinking about talking about reducing our bond buying. I'm not even sure what that means. but they're kind of tiptoeing into the direction of reducing the bond buying, but they won't even come out and say that they're thinking about it, that it may be on the agenda in the future. Folks, the English translation, all that is, the Fed's not in any hurry to reduce their bond buying. And of course, the most dramatic impact of Fed bond buying is that it keeps long-term interest rates low, which is something that benefits the housing market. Chris, why don't you weigh in on current events? What do you think these days?
Sure. Well, I think, one, you need a PhD now to understand what the Fed's talking about in each of their minutes and parse through each word. But to your point before of, you know, GDP running at 6.5% this quarter and looking forward, that, you know, frankly, you're just not going to see that level of GDP growth quarter after quarter. That's to be expected. You know, we're going to return down to something closer to that 2-3% range at some point in the back end of the year. And the same could be said about inflation. You know, we've gone through this scenario where there's been a bottleneck in terms of a lot of demand coming back in a short period of time, and that's pushed inflation as well as GDP and corporate profits to some extent in the short term higher. You know, you looked at some of the major businesses that came out with earnings this week. You know, 20% of S&P 500 earnings estimates came out essentially from those large tech companies this week. And they looked forward into the next quarter and said, you know, we expect maybe sales not to be as good as this last quarter because they were unbelievable. And that's what we're looking at is, this has been a strange period of a bottleneck looking forward into the next back end of the year. Okay, do we see a slowdown in some of those earnings? And it's not that growth dissipates, but it's not going to continue at the pace that we've seen.
you know, we have a tendency to talk about all these things in absolute kind of binary terms. It is or it isn't. And really, they're relative conversations. And I think in all these things we're talking about, you know, the numbers are pretty amazing right now because you're going backwards and measuring against a very difficult period of time. So inflation is not so much... It's where do we settle in the middle? You know, it's not going to be as much as it's spiking right now, but where do the supply chain problems or the labor problems let this thing shake out? And it could be higher than it is right now and not cause many problems. It could be lower than the last quarter or whatever and find an acceptable range. And I think that's what's important is it's likely that some of it won't be transitory and it still won't cause long-lasting difficult challenges for the economy. So I think watching the trends and being on top of the incremental movements is what really matters, and not to get too carried away in the short term with these spikes one way or the other.
I'm reassured when I look at the implied inflation rate in the Treasury inflation protected securities market. So you go out 10 years, the implied inflation rate is 2.1%. Just a tad above the 10-year average that we've seen at a time when the Fed was trying to create inflation and they couldn't. So an implied rate of 2.1% to me is hardly anything to worry about. You want a little bit of inflation in the system. You know, let's look at the stock market relative to what we've seen so far this year in the beginning of the year, particularly the first quarter. Value stocks below average, PE stocks, insurance companies, banks, utilities, oil and gas, a few others, really had a strong run. And I thought it was impressive that in the second quarter, the tech stocks said, hey, wait, we're not done going up. And I look at dispersion, difference in returns between the various asset classes, and it's pretty close to a horse race right now, where dispersion typically is 12 percentage points or more between the best and the worst. And now it's just a couple of percent difference where I see some of my favorite value funds doing as well as some of my favorite growth funds. And I find that interesting. And that's not something we normally see in the market.
No, typically you don't see that quick of a handoff, and it occurs essentially twice in 1 year of a handoff between growth to value and then value back to growth, almost quarter to quarter. And, you know, as we've looked at where interest rates have gone this year, it's been very close to who's leading in terms of value or growth, in terms of what the direction of interest rates are and what the expectation for growth is. So earlier in the year when interest rates were rising, and as you mentioned, we topped out of north of 1.7 on the Treasury, as interest rates rose, there was an expectation of higher economic growth and value stocks, cyclical stocks did better during that time period. We've seen interest rates come back a little bit, closer to the 1.2 range here in the 10-year Treasury, indicating that, you know, hey, maybe that GDP growth will slow down a little bit to something that we saw pre-pandemic. And at that point, growth stocks have done better because they can grow their revenues on their own without, a fast-growing economy. So we're seeing a changing environment leading to a change in leadership within the equity market.
But to your point, Bob, I mean, how often have we seen over the years where one part of the market starts to participate, like the broader market is joined in the fun, not at the expense of those 10 or 15 big stocks, you know? So it's been kind of fun to see the rest of the market jump into the party and not have it at the expense of another asset class.
Well, leadership normally is maintained for a while. I mean, market leadership doesn't jump back and forth. That's why the expression, the trend is your friend, became popular. So I was just amazed at, and it really speaks to the issue of how important it is to diversify your stock holdings. That you can't just ride a couple of fast horses. You need a stable loaded with different types of horses, if you will, to continue the analogy, because it's pretty difficult, if not almost impossible, to figure out, you know, exactly at what point in time will which asset class outperform. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the show. First-time claims for unemployment benefits fell to 400,000 last week. That's pretty encouraging news, in my opinion.
Bob, you know, the longer trend on those claims is really encouraging. You know, remember last April we saw, 5.3 million claims for first-time claims for unemployment insurance, and now to be under 400,000, that's pretty remarkable. We're within 6% of what we had for the average for the 27 years prior to the pandemic. So that's an encouraging trend. And you know, we've got bigger numbers on the number of people altogether claiming unemployment benefits. It's up to past 13 million now, but a lot of those claims are based on pandemic sorts of programs that are going to be going away in a couple of months. So those are going to go away soon.
I think it's interesting, Joel, to see that the states that stopped the unemployment benefits haven't seen a meaningful change in their labor market participation rates. Tells me in simple terms that there are a whole lot of people out there that just do not want to go back to working in hospitality or retail when they feel that their life could be on the line.
You know, there's some labor economists that I've followed that are hoping that what's come of all this is that maybe, you know, some workers are gaining leverage and that they're going to, you know, find better fields for themselves, that they're going to get some better pay. And, you know, in the long run, that's kind of better for the economy if people are, you know, working in better jobs and getting better benefits and then spending that money in the economy.
Joel, I read that housing subtracted 0.5% from GDP in this last quarter. Builders can't find help. They can't find supplies. In talking to a home builder not long ago, he reminded me that, you know, in the old days, pre-pandemic, they would order supplies for a home project week before and then get delivery the day of. And he said now they're going to go ahead and order everything they need to build the entire house the day the contract gets signed. That's how different the supply chain is. But having said that, you know, as you see, new home sales are down now for the third month in a row, and now it's hurting the economy, right? 6-7 months ago, we talked about how housing was really helping the economy. Not anymore. It's acting as a drag on GDP.
That's right, and you hope at some point that catches up. So 30% of all the houses, of the new houses that are for sale right now, 30% of them haven't even begun construction yet. So it's created this backlog, and there are a lot of people who are buying houses, you know, that haven't even, you know, dug a spade in the ground yet to start the construction. And construction, I mean, that's the construction part of housing. The National Association of Realtors came out with their pending home sales index this week, and that was down too. And they've lowered their forecast for the year for how many houses they're going to sell. And again, those are existing houses, but they're hoping that there's greater construction of new houses, and that's going to help the backlog of the short supply of houses that have been on the market. On the other hand, for those with houses, the National Association of Realtors said that prices have been going up so much because of this whole supply-demand imbalance that the typical homeowner has increased their housing value by $45,000. So, you know, you talk about the wealth effect. Part of that is people having their houses and feeling that they're a little wealthier, even though that's just home equity. It's, you know, on paper. But that's $45,000 for the typical homeowner.
I do really think that'll be one of those really interesting things to watch, though, because you have you don't have enough houses, you know, but you don't have enough people to build the houses that you need to build to give yourself a new house. So I think how that problem kind of solves itself in the months and years ahead will be kind of a really interesting kind of proxy for where the economy goes.
Well, ahead. And the greater problem of so many people being priced out of housing market.
That's exactly the point.
You know, those are the folks you got to focus on because they're the future.
Watch the rental.
Bob, I saw today in the paper a study showing that we're down to only about 20% of people in the country can afford the average home price. And so that's come down quite a bit since prices have spiked here. So to your point, that's it's creating a larger chasm between people who can actually afford those houses and what's actually being priced in the market right now.
And home building is something that's hard to outsource to offshore to another country. It's say, you know, I need a new house in the suburbs. You know, how are you going to build that in China or Mexico or wherever?
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoy doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.